Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
Hello, everyone. For this episode of the podcast, I talked with Feifei Hua. Feifei is part owner of the Horsepen 46 Hostel here in Shaanxi, China. And we sat down by the river to have what ended up being an awesome chat. A lot of it involved Chinese culture. And I learned a lot from this talk. I hope you find it interesting. So let's get to it and listen to my chat with Feifei Hua. We have been searching for a good spot to record a podcast for about 15 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
I think this is about as good as we'll do. Oh, yeah. See, there's a saw in the background again.
Yes. We're already trying to avoid the windy sound, huh? And also the water and then the construction.
Right. Avoiding the construction was my biggest fear or my biggest goal. And then we went outside to the nice calm river. You can hear the river a little bit, but that's okay. Yes. I think it sounds good.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The nature sounds could never be annoying, right?
No,
just the construction
other
sounds.
Than the wind. Yeah. But I think we're out of the wind now.
And now we have ghosts walking past and by.
Yeah, some goats and a goat herder. Hi.
Ni hao.
Yeah. What's he saying?
You can ignore him.
Oh.
I also don't understand. He has this strong accent.
Oh, he has a dialect.
Yeah. And also, he has some mental problems. So he used to help the government cleaning all the garbages in the morning.
Okay.
And even for that, it's a little bit challenging for him. So now his family only asks him to help their family's goats.
Oh, so he just every day moves them and they graze?
Yeah, every day. And sometimes I can see him quite angry. He's yelling for no reasons. So I don't know.
Well, it's good that he's working, though.
Yeah, it's good to have something to do in your life.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. I've seen a few times disabled people in China that just beg. And I don't know if there's much they can do about it, but it's sad, yeah. There's a guy here who begs at the top of a hill and his legs are all messed up.
But did you saw that? Because I went out one day very earlier in the morning. I saw another healthy guy dragged him to that place. And then the healthy guy left.
Oh, I saw that too. They pull him out. He's on like a little wagon.
Yeah,
and they pull him up to
exactly.
There.
So I'm thinking they probably are using him to collect the money.
Yeah, that's sad.
Which is sad. Yeah.
But you don't see too much of that in China. It's not too many people begging. But disabled people you see.
This is one thing we've been talking. A lot of people say that they say probably China is more healthy place because they didn't see too much disabled people walking on the street.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, what I'm thinking is it's because we don't have too much good infrastructures for the disabled peoples to travel alone or walking alone. And for example, we have in the cities, every city we have this pass for the blind peoples.
Oh yeah, Katie hates those things
because
there's like these grooves in the sidewalk and she can't, I don't know, it bothers her feet. It doesn't bother me at all, but.
You explained it for the lady with the high heels, that's definitely.
Oh yeah, for sure, okay.
But the thing is, a lot of people park their bicycles or even put the tables onto it.
Yeah.
So imagine you are a blind person, you're walking out by yourself. This is basically impossible.
Right.
And if you are traveling on the wheelchair, you even cannot get on the bus. But in Europe, that's different, right?
Right.
So that's why you see so many disabled people walking on the street. But in China, they can't.
Well, even beyond disabled people, like, I can't walk on the sidewalk half the time because there's cars parked there, bicycles.
Right. It's true.
But, you mentioned Europe, and I thought we ought to talk about come back to sound.
Okay.
Because it just seems like in China, there's just always a lot of noise everywhere.
Yeah.
And I guess it doesn't normally bother me that much. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 years ago, it would have bothered me more.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of gets to me eventually. And especially the construction sounds, because they're just
they're really loud, and I just can't
I
get
think
away.
The rate, it's like the frequency is too high.
Yes, so that's the high really, pitched noise.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
But it doesn't seem to bother any of the local people at all. And I think that's just a big cultural difference.
I do agree. So I think after 10 years, you still really get used to that. So you start to get used to this chaotic environment.
Yeah.
I think for us, like, I have this feeling because we grew up in an environment like this. We even didn't realize that speaking in a very loud voice in public is a problem. We even didn't realize that.
Well, maybe it's not a problem when you're here, but
yeah, like
yeah, if you go abroad and do it.
If you grow up in this kind of environment, especially yeah. I think when I travel in Asia, it's all the same. Like people pressing the drivers, pressing the horns on the street, people
right.
yelling at each other, not really yelling, just like they already get used to this loud voice.
Yeah, I think if you don't know any Chinese and you come to a city in China, you'll think everyone is just about to beat each other up.
Yes, yes.
Like they hate each other.
Yeah, sometimes like when we met tourists, they think they kind of feel like nervous and so afraid because they thought the local people are always about to fight.
Yeah.
But it's not true.
They're probably just saying like, I just bought a pair of pants. I got a really good deal.
And or come over for dinner tonight. I yeah. have some amazing meat.
But for some reason, they say it twice as loud as we would.
Yes, yes, yes. I think we already get used to the chaotic environment. So we didn't really realize that. It's like, just like the other day we're joking that we kind of like automatically have the filters in our ears. So we can choose to listen or not listen to something.
Cool.
So it's yeah. really, really, really interesting. And also back to the loud voice, I think like this is also a cultural thing because we get used to speak so loud. Everybody was raised that way. Our parents are loud. We are loud. And also you mean like Chinese people, we like to gather around. It's like we more get used to this community thing. So we have lots of people hanging out. Whenever when we were happy, we of course are very loud.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I remember one day the guests asked me like, why local people speak so loud? And I answered to her, like, if I speak in a very gentle voice, my mom would worry that I didn't have enough food to eat.
That's funny.
So, yeah.
So you just have no choice.
Yeah, we kind of like, it's a really cultural thing. It's a huge cultural difference, oh. I think.
I learned about this concept of ruinao.
Maybe
I'm saying it wrong.
Yes, like, ruinao, yeah.
Like lively.
Correct.
Like that's what you want, right? You want like a environment with a lot of people and where there's a lot of noise around.
We already get used to that. Otherwise, yeah. some people can feel really lonely. Because this afternoon, I have two friends visit me. They both are like youth hostel owners in Lijiang and in Lugu Lake. And we were talking about this topic this afternoon.
Oh, you
were? Yes, like we were talking about the about like a difference traveling or living in a different country. So we talk about a lot of Chinese people when even for some rich or not rich people living in a country for different reasons, most of them are not get used to the life over there because they think it's too lonely, everything's so quiet, and our culture will already get used to that. So I would say like we all agree, I think only 20% of Chinese people living overseas are really enjoying their lives. And 80% of them still feel they live for some reason. For example, for better education for their parents or for their kids or better health cares. But they are not really get used to the life over there. So a lot of people will still choose to come back.
Oh, we have a little dog joining us too. Hello, dog.
Hello.
I was going to ask you, or I was going to point out like, yeah, the Chinese people I know from at home in the US, a lot of them seem quite shy and introverted, and it is a little bit sad, and sometimes their English isn't that great either, and so it must be super isolating to be in that kind of environment.
Yeah, this afternoon the whole conversation started because one of my friends mentioned about the Chinese girl they met over there, and she speaks very good English. Her English test was 9 out of 10, which is she's almost as good as a native English speaker.
Right.
But she cried when she traveled along with my friends when they're sitting on the top of the mountain. My friends was super exciting. This is so beautiful. And then she started to cry. And she says she stays in the basement. She don't really feel like melted into the local American culture. And she feels so lonely. And she has so much pressure about learning like earning money. So we were start the conversation because of mentioning about this girl. So we say that a lot of Chinese not really get into these cultures.
Yeah.
When they even when they're rich enough to move into living in a different country.
Well, what about you? You've lived in other countries, right?
Not really. I just traveled over there.
Oh.
I stayed 1 month in Germany because I was on the exchange programs.
Okay.
I work in a different youth hostel over there. It's part of the youth hostel program.
Oh, cool.
So
now Germany seems to be almost the opposite of China in so many ways. It's just so organized and people are like
so
really respectful, clean and
so
quiet. Yeah. So did you have a lot of culture shock when you went there?
Yeah. I think the first thing is when I travel on their autobahn, and everybody was so quiet, no one even talking. And if I saw some people traveling, most of people traveling alone, so I can understand that you can read your books, listen to your music. It's quiet. I'm really happy. So because have you been to the Chinese train?
Trains, yeah. I love the Chinese trains.
Right. So I ride
all over China.
Opposite.
Oh yeah.
Like
wide
even
open.
Strangers talking to you, invite you over for some snacks and beers, and so you start making friends and talking or playing cards with totally strangers, and you start to become friends after the train trip. But in America, like in Germany, the train was so quiet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that. That I made friends that easily on the train because I don't have a great handle on the language.
Uh-huh.
That's a big barrier, but definitely people are friendly and they want to figure out what my story is.
Yeah.
And when you say like they offer food, I forget the word you use, offer food or something.
Yeah.
It seems more like force me to eat. Like, here, have this chicken foot.
Yes.
Here, eat it. Like, I don't want to eat a chicken foot. No, eat it.
But still, they will force you to eat that.
Yes. Eat my green eggs. You must eat my green eggs.
That's part of our nature. Or culture too.
Yeah.
We also were talking to this because I think I present the new generations in China. So we don't like our parents forcing us to eat the food just because they think it's good for you. So in China, like for the younger generation, we even created a new term. It's called that, if I translate directly, that means there is a kind of coldness. Is that your mom think you are cold. But actually, you will see some Chinese kids already sweating and they want to take off their coats, but their parents worry they get cold. So they force the kids to wear a lot, then kids start to sweat.
Huh.
So this is the coldness, like your parents think you are cold.
Oh, wow. Well, we've got some people coming back from a hike that are staying in our hostel.
Yeah.
Looks like they had a good day. We'll go talk to them later.
Part of our culture is We will jump into the conclusion that we will decide for you. We won't let yourself decide what kind of food you want to try. We just like make the decision for you. We think this is good, then we want you to try. And this kind of like politeness becomes, it's kind of rude in other countries' cultures. This is also our generation conflicts. Like our parents do things like that. For example, if I visit my parents' home, my friend's home, so my friend's parents will also force me to eat a lot of stuff I don't want to eat. And always it always happens that you will end up eating too much because they force you to do. So.
Yeah, that's a tough one too when you have to keep eating. And drinking too.
Yeah.
I've been invited a couple of times to drink baijiu here.
Uh-huh.
For those who don't know, baijiu is like a white liquor that they make in China from rice. Or potatoes. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Or mostly in this area it's corns.
Oh, really? Okay, so it can be a couple different varieties. And some of them I have actually thought tasted okay.
Mm.
But it's not necessarily the flavor that gets me. It's that if you're drinking with a bunch of men, they expect you to just drink and drink and drink.
Yeah.
And they only drink from little glasses.
Uh-huh.
But it's
little
very
shot.
Yeah, a little shot, but it's very strong stuff.
Yeah.
And the only way I think to get them to stop filling your glass is just to not drink. So your glass is just full. If you drink and it's empty and then say no, don't fill it again, it just doesn't work.
Doesn't work. So this stuff is usually around like 40% or even 60%.
Yeah.
And you know why? Because in our culture, the correct way of treat your guests, or the only way we can tell if you treat your guests well or not, is by making him drunk. So if your guests are already drunk, even if it's already start to throw up, then we will say, okay, we did our part as a host. So if you leave the table or leave their house not drunk, still sober, we will think you're not happy today. We didn't did our part as a good host.
So next time I have a guest over who's from China,
you have
to my
make
house,
them drunk.
I have to get them to throw up.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
If they haven't thrown up yet, then they're not happy.
Yes.
Then I haven't done my job. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. So, Feifei, do you want to go visit us in Beijing?
No, definitely not.
I've got a plan.
I don't want to throw up.
That's interesting. So, did you travel anywhere else in Europe or just Germany?
I traveled, stayed 1 month in Germany, and then I traveled in Netherlands and Switzerland just for like 2 or 3 days short visit.
Yeah, okay. What did you think?
Well, I like the Netherlands because like a lot of people cycling around.
Yeah, that's
so like
cool,
people are very sporty and get used to the nature a lot. So I really appreciate that. So it's for me, I think this kind of lifestyle is amazing.
Yeah.
Like people connected to the natures. And Switzerland is also beautiful, but a little bit too expensive, you know.
Oh, yeah. So expensive there.
Yeah.
I've read they've even had problems with their lower paid workers, like people who are cleaning hotel rooms and you know janitors, things like that.
Yeah.
They just can't. They literally cannot afford to live in the city, and it's just becoming an issue where they almost have to like live in Italy and commute into Switzerland every day or something like that. And so there's problems with this where there's not enough help there. There's that there's just too many rich people in Switzerland, and the prices are too high.
But I was surprised to see how beautiful their nature is. Switzerland has really beautiful mountainside and small villages.
Yeah. That's what we think of when we think of Switzerland.
Yeah, I think if I have a chance to come back, I would choose a quiet, like a small villages to stay there for a couple of days.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And I saw people in the morning, instead of doing the running thing, exercise, they did the horseback ridings around in the villages.
Oh, so it's like Shashi.
Exercise. Yeah, that's why I want to go there.
Oh, except people own the horses, you mean?
I don't know whether they own, but I saw a lot of people walking their horses and riding the horses around in the village. That's so beautiful.
Yeah,
so
cool.
I want to stay there with them. I want to help them keep the feeding the horses. So every day I can also riding the horses in the mountains. That's so beautiful.
Totally beautiful.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny that you want to go from a little village with a lot of horses and mountains to a little village with a lot of horses and mountains.
Sadly, I also realized that.
There's a horse right behind us. You can hear the bells.
Yeah,
these guys are about to go for a ride.
I have 2 horses in Shashi.
Oh, you do?
I do. Oh. I started to train the horses and keep them for almost like 3 years. And then one of the horses died because they are both like retired racing horse. They were forced to work very hard, and they don't have the people. Actually, their owner abandoned them, so they don't really have owners. So they stay in the guest house. Only the staff feeds them, but they both don't know how to keep the horses. So they have a lot of diseases, and when I first found the horses, they are almost dying, and one of them already lying on the grassland cannot stand up.
Oh no.
So you know, if the horse is lying down cannot stand up, that's a very dangerous sign.
Very bad. Yeah.
So I called the Tibetan vet to cure the horses, and even the Tibetans refused me to help them. And then I finally persuaded them. I said, you are a Buddhism. How
Buddhist,
come
yeah.
you are the Buddhist? How come you saw this knife dying in front of you and doing nothing?
Yeah.
And then they finally helped me cure the horses. So when they finally can stand up, we take the horses back to Shashi, and we find the doctors to train them to cure them for almost 1 month. And they finally, after 6 months, they're back to shape. But 2 years, that winter was the coldest winter. So the horses, which is the weakest one, he didn't survive that winter.
Wow, that was 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. And the other horses are still with us, and now we give him to the local family to take care of him.
Oh,
because their family, the 3 generations are both keeping horses. So in their house, they have a big courtyard with other horses. So my horse is super happy because he can finally live in with other horses.
Okay.
I think when the horse died, the other horse start to I think you start to have a little bit depression.
For sure, yeah.
You know, so they need partners. So right. Now he's happy with this family.
That's good.
Yeah.
So does he go for rides with the tourists?
Yeah.
Yeah?
This family will take him out only in summer because that's the high season. So they will let the tourists riding him around.
Okay.
And I saw my horse working with the guests on. I kind of feel he had this proud on his face. He's very happy that he has a purpose in life.
Oh, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's good to have a happy horse.
Yeah. So I'm happy for him now.
Yeah. That just reminded me of the word ma in Chinese.
You like horse?
Well, there's ma, the horse.
Yeah.
And then if you take the character for mouth and put it in front of the horse, you might not think of it this way at all, but this is how I learned it.
Interesting.
Then that means it's asking a question. And so I remembered, because it's a horse, a mouth plus horse is a question.
Yes.
And so the way I remembered it is, pretending you open a horse's mouth and inside is a question mark.
Well, that's a very good connection, huh? So you can use the imagination to learn the words.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's really
nice. I think
nice.
It really helps to learn the characters.
Yeah. I also found it's interesting because like seeing our culture in a different angle, like you seeing the characters in this such interesting aspect that we even didn't realize that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's so interesting.
Right, you probably would never even think about it, huh? Like, because growing up, you just learn the characters, like when you're really little, right?
Yeah.
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 But I had to learn as an adult. So,
yes.
So I came up, well, I got a book that helped me, and it creates these stories to help visualize. And so I'm a pretty visual person in general, which maybe is ironic because I have a podcast, which is not visual at all. But the characters, though, it's really good for me to see how they look.
I think it works perfectly well for the Chinese characters because it's all studied with all different meanings, the different characters. It's like drawing pictures.
Yeah, it was so like hieroglyphics, right? Like thousands of years ago.
Yeah, so I think like if you can find the stories or visualize it, that actually really helps when you're trying to learn Chinese.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, I was a little bit before here, I was in Lijiang.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the Nashi culture a little bit, and I learned that they still write in hieroglyphics.
Yes,
yeah.
So interesting.
I think it's the only culture in the world that still uses hieroglyphics.
Yeah, it's very ancient languages for the Nashi characters as well.
Yeah, so I saw a big like sign on a wall that showed all of their, or at least some of their characters.
Yeah,
it's like cool. It's like, you know, just drawings of like a bird and a pair of hands. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I remember their mountains, it's still like the mountain shapes. It's a kind of like a very simple picture of drawing the mountains.
Uh-huh.
It's so interesting.
Right. Yeah, it's cool to see. I mean, the Chinese character for mountain, I think, looks like a mountain too. But,
yeah.
You know,
but we changed it a little bit. So I think the Nashi character still kept the original design of that.
Oh, so you think it derives from ancient Chinese, that it's split?
Yes.
Nashi kind of stayed the same and Chinese evolved?
Yeah, so I think the old, if you find the old drawings in the caves, the old character of Shan is also like this. It's like two shapes. So for the Nashi character, it still remains like a small two little mountains.
Okay.
And then the modern Chinese character move it into like this.
Into a, well, the
it's
the
simplified because here is the Shan, and they use this part, and this part to symbolize the pictures.
Okay, and you're drawing on your knee, which won't work well on the podcast, but I have found people tend to do that. If they don't know a character, even between two Chinese people, they'll say like, well, which Shan are you saying?
Uh-huh.
And then they'll draw like on their hand or something.
Yeah.
And I was really confused when I first moved to China because I didn't really know any much Chinese at all, and I still don't know that much, but I can get by now. But at first people would say something to me and I wouldn't know what they're saying, and it was pretty common for them to go oh and draw the character on their hand. And I didn't know any characters at the time. And I'm like that,
but they're expecting you to understand after they draw the
after
character.
They draw it. And I thought, god, that makes it even worse. I'm less likely. But I will say, though, now that I've been here a couple of years, I went up to buy some pastries, some what are they called? Egg tarts, they call them in English.
Dantan, yeah.
Yeah, that one. And the lady was saying something to me, but her dialect was very strong and I couldn't understand. I thought maybe she was telling me I couldn't just buy one or two, like I had to buy like a big amount. But she was like, no. And she ran and grabbed a piece of paper and wrote down some characters for me. And 2 years ago, I would have just laughed at her and gone, that's even worse. But now I saw the character for fresh. And she wrote that character and she was saying it completely differently than I recognized. But I knew that she was telling me these are not fresh. So it actually helps.
Yeah.
I don't know why she thought a foreigner would understand the
exactly.
characters, but she thought it would work and it actually worked.
Have you ever met any, like when you're traveling, met any Chinese that when they first speak Chinese to you, then they realize that you don't really understand. And then they try to speak very slowly. And no, I think also found it's very amusing that they also think that if they speak very slowly Chinese, and the foreigners will understand that.
Yeah, well that... with my level of Chinese, that actually does help.
Yeah.
If you speak, I can even tell you in Chinese, can you slow down? And that actually helps if you know some Chinese.
Yeah,
but if you're brand new, it won't help at all.
Yes. I found the local people in this era, whenever they met a Westerner, they just try to speak very slow.
Yeah.
Like, 你吃了吗? And how come they can't understand?
Why don't you understand me?
Even if you slow down.
Yeah. Well, Americans actually have this reputation for if someone doesn't know English, they'll just speak louder. Not even slower. Just say, have you eaten yet? And that's how they speak. And thinking, well, you must understand me now. I'm speaking loudly.
Yeah, how come you don't understand me? I'm already loud enough.
Yeah. But that's one thing I think Americans and Chinese have in common, is that we both come from countries with a lot of people, and pretty much everyone speaks the language. And it's almost expected that you speak it. And they don't speak another language. And maybe in Chinese they speak a dialect and then Mandarin. But they're not going to speak like, most people don't speak very good English or any other like European language. And Americans, most of them just speak English. And if they know another language, they know it at just a very low level. Whereas if you go to Europe, like in Germany, it's or Italy or anywhere in Europe, it's just very normal to hear multiple languages being spoken.
Yeah.
So we're kind of both like insulated like that. Both cultures are. So it's actually, you know, just we have very different cultures, but that's one thing we have in common.
Yeah, I do agree, and I kind of feel like we do share some of the culture thing which we have in common, and also I think the. Well, I don't know whether it's true or not, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking the concept of the relationships of the family, we also share the same thing.
Maybe in some ways. How do you mean?
In some ways, like, because maybe it's a stereotype, because like in China, we are more conventional about like the sex, the relationships. So it's difficult for us to accept like the nude beach thing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and also about the body touches, we sometimes a little bit,
yeah,
not very open to that. But
right.
Europeans, they are very open to the bodies that,
yes.
to accept the body itself, to accept the nudities, and to accept the physical intimates on the bodies.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think Americans, versus Europeans, Americans are a little bit prude. Yeah, not accepting of these things. I remember hearing this story of this woman, this American woman went to the Netherlands, I think, and they were going to the beach. And one of her friends who was from that, I think it was the Netherlands, from that country said, oh, are you going to wear a one-piece bathing suit or a two-piece? And she was thinking, I'm not going to be a prude American. I'm not going to just wear a one-piece. I'm going to wear a bikini. And so she said very proudly, like, I'm going to wear a two-piece bathing suit. And I'm going to just do it and flaunt my body, no problem. And then they all kind of laughed, and they said, no, that's not what we meant. One-piece means you only wear the bottom and nothing on top. So she actually went with a more prude example. Just proving the point further.
One day I have two friends visit me at the same time. One is America, one is from Luxembourg. So we were starting to talk about something that happened on our trip. And so the guy from Luxembourg trying to demonstrate like what kind of things he experienced from the local people, because one of the grandmas like snapped on his butt. So when he told the story, he just snapped the butt of this American, and this American suddenly becomes so nervous, you know, like, yeah. And ask him, why did you touch me like that?
Yeah.
Because they're both men.
That is a little too much.
Yeah.
I think Americans, like, with some touches are very okay with it. Like, hugging is,
yeah,
is
hugging is
totally okay, but that kind of touching, yeah, not so much.
Yeah.
One thing though, in America, that it's getting worse or more extreme with like kids, and there's almost this view, I find at least, that especially every man is like a pedophile until proven otherwise. It's like, it's weird. So like men being around little kids is almost like not so good.
Mm.
And in China, it's just totally fine. Mm. And even like taking pictures of little kids in China, it's just completely like no problem at all.
I also, maybe this is because like, even when you're talking about the subjects about being racist, or like being this kind of thing, I think the whole society make people too nervous about that.
Mm.
And in our society, we haven't gone that far yet. So it is okay to touch the kids, to play with the kids. But I mean, nowadays, I think in American society, everything, it become too sensitive.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's sometimes too much. Like, it's okay to make jokes once in a while, but like some jokes white people could never say, and only bad people can say that. And I think this kind of subject becomes too sensitive. It make people unnecessarily stressful about this. You know,
we're at a point now where we're very sensitive about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, not so much in China.
No, we haven't gone that far yet.
No.
And well, besides, like, a lot of Asians are born to be racist.
Really? Asians in general. Now we're just generalizing all Asians.
Well, have you listened? Because I'd say this, because have you watched the Ali Wong's talk show?
No.
Oh, you should watch it.
Ali Wong?
Ali Wong. She's half Chinese, half Vietnamese, and was born and raised in America.
Okay.
And then she stepped on the talk show stage, and her famous piece is Cobra. And she talked about the culture difference and how our Asians looking at Asians, and how as her grew up in America, so but she still feels very connected to the Asians. So all her talk shows, it's all about culture differences.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
That's why I found it so hilarious. And all my friends living in Dali, we love her, she's so interesting. For example, you must also agree that she says the ultimate enemies of the Asian woman is the sun.
Yeah.
You agree?
I've noticed
with that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they are so afraid of being tanned.
Yes, they have this thing called a face kini here.
Yeah, and also the reason she also says that our Asians are born to be racist. So that's why she chooses to marry another Asian man instead of marrying a Western man, because they can go home and be racist together. For example, like, you must know that sometimes most of Chinese don't like Japanese.
We
don't like, even for me, I don't really like Koreans. I have to admit that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and also thinking about if I'm dating with American guy, maybe my dad will say, not too bad. But imagine this, if I start to date a black guy, how my parents will react. I don't think most of the Asian people will be happy with that.
No?
No. Well, actually, the thing she said, maybe it's like, it's too much, it's exaggerating, because of, you know, she's trying to make people laugh on the stage. But I personally feel this, it's true.
Okay.
And it's sad, because I think I already represent the new generations of China, right? So I represent the people who have good educations, like very well educated, working in international companies. I did before for 6 years, 2 international companies. So For people like us, when I'm talking to some of my ex-workmates, sometimes I feel so ashamed. because
of the
things they were saying or doing. It's like they're making jokes about the black people, they're making jokes about Arabic, and sometimes, because we have a group chat, right? So when they're posting the jokes or like this, I would say, don't you guys think this is a little bit like very racist to make jokes like this?
Yeah, yeah.
Or forward some stupid jokes like this.
Right.
And we were even having a debating inside our little group. Because one of friends, she's actually, he's funny because he graduated in a very famous Chinese university. And then he finished his master degrees in Germany. And he come back in Shanghai working a very, very, very high salary. So I think he represents the mid class of the China.
Okay.
So he works for the fund companies. But he makes some very bad jokes about the Arabic thing and about the black peoples in Guangzhou. And he says black people should be kicked out of Guangzhou. They make Guangzhou dirty and unsafe. I say, wow, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Are you sure this is the thing you want to say that in our group chat? Because in front of all the people, you say this? This is too much, right?
When it's recorded and everything. I mean, you shouldn't say it anytime, but wow.
The funny thing is only two people back up me in that group chat.
Really?
And most of people choose to ignore, or they say, okay, you made a good point. And I think this is the common thing. Like, this is like the stereotypes in Chinese people's mind. Because white people represent the rich class. Mm. We all think, have you ever experienced that when no matter where you go, all the Chinese, especially the old generations of Chinese women, come over to you and will ask you, are you from America?
Yeah,
it happens to my friends. Like, they are not from America, but in their concept, it's like all the white people, the rich people, are from America. They even don't think about, are you from Germany or something?
No, I found, like, especially the older or less educated Chinese, they have a limited knowledge
understanding of the
outside world, outside of China.
So
anything.
This is how the racists come from, because they think the white people, American is the rich company, so white people are from America. And then the black people are from the poor country, which is even poorer than us. So they don't really accept that.
Oh, okay.
So, I found it so ashamed as part of our people. Like, we commonly have this kind of concept, which is sad.
Yeah, but it is. But I think you will get there. Like, you're changing. China's
changing
so fast.
Yeah.
And I think views like that will evolve over time, and especially with more exposure to the Western world and like more foreigners. But, like, yeah, I think we could probably agree that, like, America needs to, like, dial back on the sensitivity a little bit.
It's true.
Just a little. And then China needs to go the other direction. Like,
yes.
Kind of meet in
the
middle.
We should meet in the middle.
Should be some sort of happy medium.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
No telling racist jokes or, like, just really not even what you said. That wasn't even very funny. It's just, like, pure racism. But also, like, yeah, we could be a little bit too sensitive. So.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's true. What we were talking about, it's based on the culture differences we have between Americans and Chinese, or even generally Chinese and other
and outside world.
Yeah, outside world.
Yeah, it's one of the things I'm really interested in.
But yeah, me too. I also find it so interesting. Yeah.
Ah, for sure. But another topic I'm always interested in is language.
Mm.
And your English is very, very good.
Thank you.
I must say. So where did you learn?
Well, actually, I just learned in school. And my English teacher is a Chinese.
Really?
Yeah.
And you still learn this well?
Well, I guess I was really lucky because most of the English teachers in China, they teach English in Chinese. But she's different. And also, she didn't even go study overseas. So she taught herself just by listening to the radios at that time.
Huh.
And also at that time, listening to the Western videos is like illegal. So she just secretly listen to the BBC, CNNs on the radio.
Oh, she grew up like during the Cultural Revolution, or
yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she speaks. Her dialogue is a little bit mixed, from English accent and American accent. So in her class, she insists that we all speak English, no Chinese allowed.
Great.
So I think all our classmates speak very good English.
Okay, so that makes a big difference then.
I think it's a huge difference.
Yeah, I've just met I've met many times Chinese people who have studied English for like 8 years.
Mm.
I can't speak a word of it.
Yeah.
and they can read it pretty well. Uh-huh. Like, and people have even told me, like, yeah, my teacher was Chinese. Uh-huh. She couldn't speak English. Uh-huh. And so all we learned to do was how to read and write.
Mm. Oh, speaking of the languages, did you remember that we also talk about another huge culture difference, like, based on the language itself?
Yeah, well, what specifically?
Like I said, and also this kind of, like, aspect is first brought up by my American friend who has been living in China for 10 years, and he speaks very good Chinese. And then he sometimes told me, someday we were having tea in the courtyard, and he said, Chinese people can be super straightforward, but your culture is not that straightforward. It's kind of like we have very opposite thing.
Yeah.
In the first beginning, I think in our culture, we always consider, which is also funny, when the old generation talking about Western guys, we would say, oh, they are so straightforward. Mm-hmm. So our culture, I'm not supposed to just telling you I'm angry, right? This is not part of our culture.
Right.
We always choose to be polite and try to stay away from the conflicts. But on the other side of our culture, it's what he says is quite true. It's like we sometimes can be really straightforward. Like, you can be called puns, like the fat guy or the guy with glass or the bald guy. Come over here. Huh. People call you this kind of names on the streets, even if you met for the first time. They even didn't consider it's rude. But yeah. On the other part of our culture, if you want to say something, it's rude to say it directly. You have to, even for refusing people, you have to refuse in a very polite way, which is by say some vigorous things like, oh, I'm not so sure. Yeah. I will let you know later.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me, because when I get that, I don't know what that means. And like even with, like, I was asking you if you want to record one of these podcasts, yeah. And you kind of didn't say yes, you didn't say no. I'm like, does she just not want to, or is it just maybe later? It's just hard
but
for me to
you
know.
You see, like, the difference is, as you ask me directly, do you want it or not?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this is the Western way of approaching this kind of, how we call it? Like, if we're facing a problem, then you will come forward and ask me directly, mm-hmm. right? But in our culture, we don't solve the problem like this.
Well, how would you ask this kind of question in your culture?
I have to admit that I'm the person always being considered rude in our culture.
Oh, okay. Well, what if you're not?
So
what if
most
you're being
of the
polite?
People being polite way is try to guess. We don't really point the problem out. We don't put the things on the table. So if I were you, as a Chinese way of processing it, we would kind of think, okay, maybe she didn't say yes, so she don't want to do that. We were guessing the problems.
Okay, so you almost have to, like, read minds.
Yes, which is why I consider it's difficult for me, because I personally believe, maybe that's the difference, because I had this different understanding is because I used to work for international companies. So if you want to do your job right, I cannot just guessing what you're thinking. I have to confirm and make sure I did the right thing. So I also work in the communication department, like promotion department. So when I'm talking to the media, I have to make sure he understands that. So maybe that's the difference, how I approach things differently. So I would prefer to put things on the table. But it's actually more than once. Well, it's actually, I have to say, very often. It's more often than you imagine. I've been called rude. The people told me, you are so rude, right in front of my face.
Huh.
And some people refuse to be friends with me.
Wow.
So it happens to me a lot because I'm too straightforward.
Okay.
And I also have difficulties to understand this part of the culture. So I would talk to my friends and even talk to Carol, because she's from Guangzhou. And for their Guangzhouese culture, it's like very conventional parts of our culture comes from.
Okay.
So I asked her, actually. So she helped me understand a lot. So she says, like, people don't refuse people directly. We don't put things on the table. So you have to guess from, well, if she's really happy, she will say, yeah, I would like to do that. And if she's not saying anything and she's smiling, she's trying to move her eyes away, then you should know this is a no. And if you keep chasing her and forcing her on that, then you'll be rude.
Okay.
So I'm the person who's still chasing them because I can't read the signal. I still need a very hard and solid and no.
Right, right. Sometimes in American culture, you'll get a little bit of that too. And I guess the classic one is a guy asks a girl out on a date and she says, oh, I have to wash my hair that night.
Yeah, exactly. That's how our Chinese way of refusing people.
But in business, it seems to be more like straightforward, yes or no.
Yeah. Mm. That would make things so much easier. So I really like that.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really like that.
I mean, you're not too straightforward for me. I don't think you're rude.
I'm thinking even for the Western cultures, even if I'm too straightforward, even if I'm rude, then at least people will still be friends with me.
Yeah.
But in our culture, I do have a lot of friends who refuse to be my friends anymore.
Wow. Well, I mean, and like for me coming here, I probably come off as rude all the time too, but I think I get a little bit of a pass because I'm a foreigner.
Yeah, right.
They probably just go, that guy's, he doesn't know anything. Yeah. He's just a foreigner. And I'm not expected to know a lot of stuff. That was like before I came here, I was really worried. Well, maybe not worried, but thinking about it consciously about offending people.
Mm.
And especially like at dinner time, like, oh, if I put my chopsticks the wrong way, will people think I'm like trying to kill them? Or, you know, like I just don't know what's going to happen. And I found like a lot of that, like they'll you're excused because you're a foreigner.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, you are the outsiders of this culture, so you will easily be forgiving. Mm. The worst scenario is when you walk away and your host family will say, oh, stupid foreigners.
Oh, yeah.
but not for us.
I hope you guys don't. But
I mean, we won't be excused that easily.
Oh, you
won't.
Because
we are part of their own people, so they expect us to read the signal.
Yeah.
So that's why I've been considered rude.
Hmm. It must be like really hard if you are an American-born Chinese and you don't speak Chinese.
Mm.
I'll have to try to do a podcast with somebody that like a friend or something. And learn more, but
I can introduce a guy to you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because if you grew up in America,
yeah,
and you're not really introduced to the Chinese culture very much, and then you come to China just to see what it's like, the people here see that you look Chinese.
Yeah, they expect you to understand.
Yeah.
And then you don't. That's kind of like, it's a very hard time for them too. I sometimes feel bad for them because, you know, it's also burning themselves inside. They also want themselves to know more about their homeland. But they still feel it's like an outsider no matter how hard they try.
Huh.
So unless they start to learn the language itself and then start to communicate itself.
Yeah.
For example, there is a boy, he came back. His mom is Chinese and his dad is America. But he has this black hair and black eyes, so he looks 100% Chinese.
Okay.
And then he chose to come back. At that time, he cannot say any Chinese word. But we were working together in a student group in Sichuan, and on the street, we saw a guy falling on the floor, and he had some diseases. And then there's two Chinese guys go over there and use the TCM way to press this part to wake this guy.
Oh, traditional Chinese medicine.
Yeah, traditional Chinese medicine. Because in like it's you know the acupuncture, right?
Yeah.
So we believe that there are certain parts of the place on your body that when you give some pressures or put the needles inside, it helps you.
Okay.
So when the guy fended over, they went over, they pressed on his hand, and then this guy wake up.
Oh, okay.
And then we had a huge debate with my friends here. So he cannot understand. He even said that with the American standard, you have to leave the man alone. You don't touch that man.
Yeah.
And then these two women were touching him, and he was screaming like, leave him alone, leave him alone. And then without 1 minute, the guy just wake up and sitting over here. And he didn't understand what happened. So we were have a huge debate about TCMs, about the traditional, about the acupuncture. He don't believe one thing at all. The whole thing. But that was his first year in here, and he had a lot of difficulties when we were working together. Facing all our work was in the countryside, dealing with peoples in a very like not very educated people, so you have to understand our culture very well for that,
for sure.
But after 3 years, now he has a Chinese girlfriend and he speaks good Chinese now. And he even go to the TCM doctor next month, he told me.
So he's a believer now.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess we do have a thing where it's happened more than once, where someone gets into a car accident or some trouble, and they're injured, and someone who means well, who wants to help them, comes and pulls them out of the car or
that's
moves
what
them
they
or something.
Worried about.
Yeah, and then and then they're paralyzed, like injures them worse.
It's true.
So some states actually have laws that you could be prosecuted. You'll get in trouble if you try to move someone if you don't have the medical knowledge necessary to do it, which, you know, it kind of makes sense in a way,
even though
it's too bad that you're just a well-meaning person.
I also realized actually a lot of the bad things are done in the names of the good deeds.
Throughout history.
Yeah.
A lot of, you can come up with countless examples of people doing very bad things.
And including this first aid process, that some people, if you don't understand that, then you are really do a bad thing.
Yes, you can make things worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. So anyway, back to the culture stuff, the language difference. I didn't really thinking about that way unless my American friends brought that up. Like, when we have solving the problems, our culture is we hope everything is not that on the table. But when we addressing people, we would call a stranger like a fat guy. And we didn't consider that rude. But for this part of our languages, it's still like very straightforward.
So if it's about physical appearance, then you just say whatever you want, whatever comes to mind. And if it's about getting together and getting from point A to point B, then it's, there's a lot of zigzagging in between. And we would just draw a straight line.
I think when I hanging out with my Western friends who living in China, we always have this conversation back to this kind of topic. And then we share the experience we had. Like my friends who brought this up, he says that he once lived with a Chinese family in Dali. It's a minority family. So once he trying to use the big glass jar to put some wines he bought. So he tried to make wine out of this. And the family, the host family he's living with, they don't, well, in the end, he finally realized that the family don't want him to use his jar, their jar. But they didn't say it directly. So instead, the woman told her, you know what? If you put these jars full of the grapes, it's too heavy for the shield. The shield will be broken. So you have to use something else. And then he said, no, the shield is strong enough. So he didn't get the point at first until this lady comes to him three times. And then he finally realized, okay, you know what? He trying to tell him not to use this jar, but not directly. In the way that she pretends that she's doing this out of his own good. But it's not true. It's just because she don't want him to use her jar.
Wow. God, thinking back, that's probably happened to me a lot, too.
So probably you didn't get it.
Yeah, and I probably just thought, oh, this person's an idiot. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, how come this shield is strong enough, right?
Wow.
Probably will still feel the same way.
Yeah,
and you will feel, oh, they're just stupid.
That probably, you're probably right. And that's just like a cultural thing.
Saving face kind of thing. Exactly, saving face.
Wow. I guess these kind of epiphanies come over time, you know?
I think this saving face thing is the also, I believe, the same reason that you feel most of the Chinese who living overseas are very shy. Because in our culture, we're trying to avoid the directly face-to-face conflicts.
Yeah.
So our culture, we are not raised to express our feelings. So that's how most of the Chinese are shy.
Okay.
I'm guessing that's what I'm thinking part of the reason is why.
That's probably, I think you're onto something. I think you're right. That's probably a big part of it. And then the language thing. But some of them do speak very good English and still are quite shy.
Yeah, they're afraid of express their feelings in the public. And even for the Chinese students, because I try also for the part time, I teach people, the Chinese people to translate. So I trained the translators. They are all Chinese kids. And I found the Chinese kids on the classrooms, they are so afraid of express their own feelings. And I also feel it's, you know, the American kids are different, right? So when we brought in question, the kids are always trying to, they will volunteer and answer that. We can start to have a debate. Yeah. But the Chinese kids can never do that. So I'm also curious why. I've been thinking this for years. And then now I'm thinking, because oral culture don't encourage the kids from the very first beginning to express their feelings, not only in the classroom, because the traditional education way in Chinese is teacher keeps saying everything on the classroom,
yeah.
And the kids are just in charge of taking notes. You cannot challenging the authorities, with which the authorities could be your parents, your teachers, your boss.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a really big one, and that's the one I want to hope it can be changed in the future, because it's really bad for the kids.
Hmm.
I was sharing this idea with a lot of my friends, which is all around my same age. So we were also had the same experience that when we were kids, our parents never apologized to us. It's like the education way is like authority education. You just listen. So in our education systems, the most common words a kid will be listened to in his whole life is 听话, which means behave. Just listen to me and behave and shut your mouth.
Wow.
So 听话 actually is a very bad part of our culture. It is good in sort of the ways, but I think the whole society involves, and new generations, if you want to feed the society well, if you want the kids to like be a very good person, of creative person, the person who can do its job well, is the person who can actually debate, you can express your feelings either by defending yourselves or asking the support from your boss or your teachers.
Yeah.
But if the kids raising in the traditional culture, like this kind of education way, they listen to the authorities. They are not supposed to challenging the authorities. This kind of kids will losing to be non-creative. Yeah. And they probably will always feel depressed. They cannot get enough support from their boss or teachers, because they don't. The teachers or bosses cannot understand what's happening with them.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it starts very young and continues into adulthood. I've heard countless stories of friction between a employee and a boss, where like in China it's just the boss says do it and then you do it. You don't question why. You don't say
that's, but this is not good,
that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, this
even
is
if
not
it is
good.
A terrible idea, you're supposed to just do it.
Or like especially for us, because we prefer to solve the problems under the table. We don't put our feelings or ideas on the table. So it's this part already easily to bring a lot of misunderstandings.
Yeah.
And if you don't know to express yourselves, then you could be wrongly treated or understood by others. And if you don't know to express yourselves, you don't know how to fix these misunderstandings. Probably you did a good job, then your boss didn't appreciate it.
Right.
Or probably you are wrong, but your teachers don't understand what you're heading to. So this is totally not healthy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think in the that's why I'm so interested in the education in the future, because I think this all comes from the families, the kids, even in the during the kindergarten stage. So they need to know that it is okay to express your feelings in front of your parents.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really refreshing to hear that, that your attitude toward it. Now, is this the kind of career you want to have? You want to do something with this?
Yeah.
What are you thinking about?
I haven't figured it out yet, but I'm just have a strong feeling that this is a crying, demanding market right now. Like the new generation, the parents already realized that when my friends become the parents, they already realize the old traditional way of treating the kids are wrong. But we don't know how. We don't have any organization to provide us the information. We even don't know where to ask the helps. So I want to do something about that. because I really realized the difference of how raising the child differently. The kids can turn up quite differently. I already realized this, but I think I'm also need to learn more about the whole education systems and how to be this whole knowledge.
Yeah, putting it all together.
Yeah, so I think I'm right now I'm trying to find any organizations or training programs I want to attend to. So this is part of the reason I learned German, because I'm thinking Germany has some good programs as well. So I want to learn this, and then I want to come back to help my people or just my friends how to be a parent.
Yeah, I could see a huge market for that.
Yeah, for example, there's another part of culture difference. You asked me about what I experienced in Europe. The noise thing is one thing, but it's kind of like not a huge shock. The really huge shock I had when I was living there, I was living in Weimar. Weimar was such a small town. It's
in
like
Germany?
Weimar, it's a small old town. So even in Weimar, I see a lot of facilities the society provided for mom and kids and disability peoples. And for the kids, I think the Europe, the idea of treating the kid is treat them as an individual person. We also have to respect the needs and the requirements of the babies. Mm-hmm. But in our culture, we prefer to treat the kids as a little toy. So when I first came back from Europe, and I flied back to Yunnan by landing in Lijiang, and I went out for the dinner with my friends in Lijiang. And I saw the Chinese family, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, they were taking group photos with their grandson in the middle of the river, because there's a huge rock. So you can actually walk onto the rock and then take the photo in the middle of the river. It's a very shallow river.
Yeah.
And then all the adults jumped, of course, easily walked off that rock and then back into the grasslands of the riverbanks.
Yeah.
They left the little boy crying in the middle.
What?
And because the kids are too small, he cannot jump across the rock to the grassland, riverbank. So instead of helping the kids, they did a typical Chinese parentinghood thing, which is they found it amusing. So the kids were, and first I saw the whole thing. So the kids were first, oh, it's okay, you will get me. So he was also playing there. And then the kids start to feel nervous about this. This is only a 3-year-old boy. And then the grandma and grandpa start to take the photos of the kids being nervous. Whoa. And then they were keep laughing, just like right in front of the kids. The kids, and first he was okay, and then he feel nervous and feel worried. And then the kids turned into very anxious. And then the kids turned into angry. And he started to yelling some F-words and start to cry. During the whole four different process, all the parents did was taking photos and laughing so badly, especially when the kids start to use the F word and crying. Mm-hmm. All his grandma and grandpa start to laugh so hard that they even bent over.
Wow.
And then the mom was taking the photos. After taking this crying picture of this little boy in the middle of the river, then they finally his dad hold the boys back to the riverbank.
Oh my God, huh.
This is part of our culture. We think the kids are so funny. We like to teasing the kids. And when you grow up, the parents would also say like, remember how stupid you were in the middle of the river.
Yeah, now they've got the picture to prove it.
Look at this. It's like a nice memory, but this is totally wrong.
Kids probably traumatized.
We have so many, like when you're talking about the new generations, when you're talking about why we have so much social problems, I all believe this is all connected to the parentinghood we had. Because I think taking me and my friends, for example, all my ex-workmates, they graduated from good schools. They went to good companies. Now they are all like middle class of Chinese. And when we sitting down and talking about parentinghood, we all somehow been traumatized when we were a kid. And we think sometimes even when we talk about like personal development, we're all facing certain kind of level of traumatized. We need to face that. And which is mostly commonly from our childhood. Like, for example, almost all my friends, and including me, myself, we were told by our parents that they found us in the garbage can. which ironically, all my childhood dream, do you know that what I want to do when I grow up?
Is this a book or something?
No. Like,
oh, what do you my, ask? Oh, me, people
my,
ask
my,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. My childhood dream that when I grow up, I want to be the lady who collect all the garbages. Because I feel personally connected to the garbage can. Yeah. And my parents trying to make the story true. They even took me onto the street and pointed a blue metal can and told me, I found you right in the middle of this garbage can. This one, precisely this one. So I feel so connected to this garbage can. Huh. So when I was a kid, I would think, okay, I want to grow up and be the lady collect all the garbages. And wow. I have a friend. Her mom told her that she was found in the on the bottom of the tree, which is in front of the village. So when she was in the teenager, she had a huge fight with his parents, and he was so sad, so he just decided to leave home. So he packed his stuff in a small bag, and he decided to leave home. And that year, he was around like 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I asked her, where did you go? And she said, I just went to that tree because I still really believe that I was founded. So I consider this tree half of my mom.
Oh, man.
This is so common. This is all I can really say, like, even all the Chinese kids all face that.
Huh.
And this is one common thing. The second thing, which is even worse and mean, is when our parents had a business trip, all his workmates, all these adults will come over to me and said, oh, your parents don't want you anymore. They already left you at home. You are abandoned. Do you know that? Are you worried? They're trying to teasing you. If you cry, they will laugh.
Hmm.
And I remember cried so hard and ran back home.
Whoa.
And asked my mom, are you really abandoned me?
Yeah.
Are you leaving? Are you sure it's just kind of a business trip? Are you sure you will come back? Can I go with you?
Yeah.
This happens to every kid I've ever known.
Wow.
All my friends, we all experienced that. Well, after this interview, you can try to ask every Chinese you know and ask them, do they have the same experience? I can guarantee 80%, at least 80%, definitely have the same experience.
Huh. It sounds like you got to dial it back a little bit with these stories. I mean, we have a similar thing in Western culture where parents tell their little kids that a stork brought them, a bird.
Oh, yeah, bird.
A bird
yeah.
with a baby in its mouth. Mm. But at least that's kind of a positive thing, like, oh, a beautiful bird flies in. Or even by the tree, like, oh, there's this tree and this is where you find babies. Mm. But the garbage can, it's like you're not even wanted.
Back in the 60s, probably all the parents are having the same stories about how the babies came from. But come on, like after 1980s, the parents already know this is wrong. They already have this, let's say Americans, maybe 1990s, you already have this textbook, right? Telling kids how the babies come from.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
yeah right. But the thing is, even till now, the younger generations of parents still do the same thing.
Hmm.
But that's why I'm thinking this is a huge demanding.
Yeah,
thing
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, on the market.
And you have authority because you're Chinese. Like, it's so much harder for a foreigner to come in and tell someone like.
Well, actually, it's opposite.
Oh, really?
In China, we have a saying. It's called "外来和尚好念经." That means the monks from the outside, from the different place, people will believe him better than the local monks.
Oh, so I'm totally wrong about that. Okay.
Yeah, and our culture, remember our stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, we believe the white people represents the civilization world, the more developed era. So we should listen to them, whatever they say.
Mm.
So if I really want to put on this project back on the market, I haven't figured out how it works, business modes. I haven't figured it out yet, but one thing I'm sure, either I can get a certificate from the Western world, or I have a partner who is a Westerner.
Yeah, or maybe both. Yeah.
Use his Western face to persuade the government to market.
Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense then, in that context.
Yeah, it's ironically, it works that way.
Huh.
Yeah.
But it might work out well, and I mean, yeah, I don't quite have a vision of how this would look either, but I sure think you're onto a good idea.
Yeah, I believe like most of the society problems, like when you're in the Chinese cities, we can see lots of people are so easily to get angry. A lot of people are so anxious. Like we have bad reputations of Chinese tour groups. They always tried over to find a, to fight over for the seats, even though they already bought the tickets in advance, right?
Yes,
and
yes,
they fight over, they don't want to wait patiently in the line. So yep. It's like our whole nation, it's like we are always anxious. We are always feel not secured. Why is that? If a person feels incured, it also because this kind of insecurity feelings is from your childhood. If you don't have this secure, if you don't have this self-confidence, back to why the Chinese people are so shy. They don't have this confidence. If you have enough confidence, if you have enough like safety, security thing, feelings, you will act differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's how I believe this is all connected to our parenthood education problems went wrong.
Wow. I think you're really passionate about this, and you're like, wow, you've really got the right attitude, and I'm sure you'll be super successful.
Wow, thank you.
Definitely, I think I've learned a lot just in this hour or so talking to you. So we're going to have to leave it there, though, and finish it off. Thanks for coming on the show. Do you have
thank
anything
you.
Else, any sage wisdom you want to, besides what you've already given us, which was a lot, anything else you want to
I don't know. I'm just
know?
So happy that you let me sharing all my stupid ideas.
No, not stupid ideas. Very good ideas.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.